Hi, I'm Mark Budd.
And I'm Jair Briggs Davis.
And we're from Mark and Jair Explain Sports.
This is a tripod production.
The following is a tripod production. Do not attempt to adjust your dial. Mark Budd and Jair Briggs Davis, two friends growing up in the Big Apple, two friends who became sports writers at the top of their craft. Mark, the assistant sports editor at Drexel University's The Triangle. Jair, the color commentator and reporter at Curry College. On their own, they give their own unique insights. However, together, Mark and Jair explain sports.
What's going on, everybody? It's your boy, Jair Briggs Davis. Season 2, Episode 3. I'm here with my co-host, Mark Budd. Mark, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, Jair. Just enjoying the sports that are on. Hopefully it lasts, but for now, just got to enjoy it while it stays.
Absolutely, Mark. You never know when a season could potentially end. We've talked a lot personally about Major League Baseball in like the scenario, but it seems like things are smoothing out a little bit. So, Mark, in today's news, how do you feel about the NBA season and stuff like that?
Well, so far with the NBA season, I think it's going great. There's a zero positive test. And I think if I had to choose one season that definitely won't get canceled, it's definitely the NBA, the way they're handling everything. But for the news update for today, there was more positive tests to the MLB coming from the St. Louis Cardinals. Apparently they were out in a casino. I don't know why these guys think it's a good idea to go anywhere besides being with the team. That's beyond me. So if that continues to happen, I definitely think that the season is going to get canceled. What do you think, Jay?
Well, I remember when the Marlins news came out, I remember that a lot of people were freaking out and they were talking about baseball is going to be canceled. But one thing that you can't forget is that you also have the extra 30-man rosters that, like, that taxi squad at the time. Also, MLB is cutting down the original rosters from 30 to 28. But you have to think about the taxi squad, and that's what the taxi squad is for. It's sort of like you got to figure out a way to handle it, especially like when a problem comes. But also, you know, if there's more outbreaks and if you see players being stupid and not caring about themselves or caring about the people around them, you know, don't be surprised if there is actually a shutdown.
Definitely, Jair. I agree with that. We're definitely going to get more into that. Before that, I'd like to introduce our guest today, Lamar L.A. Smith, a good friend of mine and an author of a new book, part of the series Jack of All Trades. Lamar is also a sports enthusiast and has his own podcast called Let's Talk About Sports. And he also happened to be my camp counselor 4 years ago at American University, Discover the World of Communications. So, Lamar, welcome to the show, man.
What's up? Glad to be here.
So, Jair has some questions for you.
So, Lamar. Lamar, first things first, before, like, I even get into my questions about you in sports, what was it like being Mark's camp counselor?
That was interesting. I mean, I remember the very first day of class because, obviously, I'm the person that greets everyone. That was my role as far as, like, moving the students in. So I didn't get but so much of an impression of everyone because I'm just trying to get everyone where they need to be, you know, make sure they feel good or whatever. But I still remember the first class. I have a lot of crazy sayings that are funny. And for whatever reason, no matter who I meet, they always latch on the one thing. So I remember he was in class and we were all sitting down and he was doing something. And I was like, you gotta chill out. I was like, Mark, you lost in the sauce. And then all the guys in the class just start bawling, laughing. And then for the rest of the camp, anytime Mark did anything like crazy or just like out of line or wasn't like all the way there, they would say, Mark, you're lost in the sauce. And I was like, of all the things I say, y'all latch on to that. But it was fun, great time, you know. His group of friends that I was, you know, the teaching assistant for in the camp because they were in my sports journalism class. That I don't think I'm closer to any, like, one group of students out of all the students that I've had over my 3 years at that program. Like, whenever I see them, I could be talking to them a month from now, 2 years from now, whatever the situation is. Like, it's all love. Like, they got my back, I got their back. And just like any student, I always tell them, I'm only one call away. I don't care if whenever you hit me up or what you need, I'm trying to get your back.
That's good. That's good. Here's another question for you. Now let's get more into the sports side. So Mark tells me that you're a Yankee fan. How do you feel about their season so far?
They've been killing it. I mean, Aaron Judge has gotten hot, and he's looked more like the Aaron Judge that we saw in 2017 during his rookie year when he was crushing everything that he saw at the plate. And right now, I mean, they lost their first game in about a week when they lost to the Phillies yesterday. And then they won the second half of that doubleheader. But they just been killing it. I mean, they have, far as top to bottom, one of the best lineups. Like, you go to Gary Sanchez, Luke Voit, you got DJ LeMahieu. Stanton has been playing well, which has been a surprise, because sometimes it takes him a minute to get in the groove of things. So top to bottom, it's like I can't pitch around anyone. So that's been tough. And Gerrit Cole has been worth every bit of money that we paid him. Gerrit Cole has been firing all cylinders. He's played great in all of his three starts already. He's 3-0, of course. So as long as they keep this momentum up and the starters do their thing, I think they should win the World Series. They got, if not the best bullpen, one of the top five bullpens in the league with Britton, Chad Green, you got Canely, you got Rodas Chapman, who hasn't played because of Corona, but that's a loaded, loaded bullpen, and all of them throw heat. Then you got the lineup that I just talked about. They should have a really, really good chance, you know, should the season progress and play out how we think it's going to play out.
I mean, I think that if there's anything that needs to be fixed with the Yankees, it's potentially that starting rotation a little bit. I think that it could be a little bit more tweaked out. James Paxton, he hasn't looked that good so far. And I know that Tanaka is coming off of his concussion after taking that lineup. But yeah, at least, like, you know, having Gerrit Cole, and but it also sucks that, you know, Severino is out too.
Tanaka, I just count on him during the playoffs. I don't know why he's so wishy-washy during regular season, but during the playoffs, he just takes it to another gear. So him and Gerrit Cole, two horses, reminds you Justin Cole or Strasburg Scherzer. So if Tanaka is going to be playing like the postseason Tanaka that I know, Tanaka time, then I think that should be enough considering how strong the bullpen is. Because, I mean, Aaron Boone is quick to just say, all right, you've been pitching three innings, you've been sucking, let's put in Chad Green, let's put in Canely. Like, just keep it rolling so we can get this W.
So, Lamar, like, if baseball makes it that long going into October, who do you see? I'm sure that your pick for the American League would be the Yankees representing the Yankees representing the American League in the World Series. Who do you see coming out the National League?
The National League, that's a tough one. I feel like there's so many teams that are good that it all depends on who gets hot at the right time. Like how the Nationals got hot last year with their squad and got that chemistry flowing and whatnot. But everyone wants this. Is what?
I'm a big fan of their celebrations.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm from D.C., so it was good for them to finally get over the hump. I've been waiting for that since I went to their games at RFK Stadium in 2005, 2006. So it felt so good. But with them, I have questions more so about their lineup because, you know, you lost a lot of pop with Rendon leaving. Then you lost pop with Ryan Zimmerman opting out of the season. So those are two, you know, big consistent hitters. So that means guys like Victor Robles, Michael Taylor, those guys have to step up. And Juan Soto, he can't just be, you know, your second best hitter, your second best player. He has to be like a literal monster. And then the bullpen has to be as clutch as it has. One good sign is, you know, Rainey has looked really, really good this season. Sometimes he could be erratic with his control. But I think the Nationals will find a way to get themselves in the mix just because their starting rotation is that good. And it helps when you only have to be the second best team in your conference in order to make the playoffs this year because they expanded the playoffs. So can't never count out a reigning champ. I think they'll be there. I think the Dodgers will be there too. But baseball, just like any sport, is more off of chemistry and when you're clicking than the talent level. Like, talent obviously has to be there, but I just think they're going to choke again. They have spent pretty much almost $1 billion on that roster, if not close to, far as like the total of their contracts. And they got every outfielder that you can name pretty much. With, they got Betts, they got Bellinger. Like, they have so much talent in the outfield, and there's too many outfielders. And then you got, you know,
Jock Peterson too.
Yeah, so Jock Peterson, who only hits home runs, is literally a single or home run. So they have so much talent that it makes me want to say that they will come out, but you can't count the Braves, who got a loaded squad, even though they just lost Soroka to, you know, the Achilles tendon. And then you got Colorado Rockies have been playing really, really good. I don't know when they found their mojo, but in a short season, a team with that type of, you know, pop with the bat, you got Chicago with the Cubs. And so, I don't know. I think the Dodgers are obviously the favorite, but my gut just tells me they're going to find a way to choke it away. Like, I don't know why, but Clayton Kershaw, for whatever reason, just never is the guy that we need him to be in the playoffs. Always something happens. Like, I don't know what to call it. I don't know if they cursed or what, but something always happens.
Can I ask you a question, Lamar? Do you think that the Minnesota Twins has any chance of actually beating the Yankees in the American League championship?
See, I don't, because if you look at last year and just the history of their, if you want to call it a rivalry or whenever they face in the postseason, the Twins have gotten thrashed, and it hasn't even been close. Like, last year, if they scored 3 runs in that series, they probably scored, like, 3 runs. Like, they got thrashed as far as, like, run differential. And I think they have – like, they have the similar makeup as far as their teams, but it's, like, the Yankees is the rich man's version of whatever that you think the Twins are. It's, like, yeah, you got Miguel Sano, but we got a Luke Voit. It's, like, yeah, you got Jose Barrios, but – we have Garrett Cole. So everything that we have a step different. And then the biggest difference, which even when the Yankees weren't, you know, a World Series contender that they've had over, like, the last decade, is a really strong bullpen, which is something that the Twins kind of struggle with. They had a situation last year where they used, like, 3 different relievers kind of based off a situation to close games, and we know who our closer is. We have a setup guy. You telling me you lose Dellin Patance? Okay. Still got Britton, Canely, Chad Green, who is a beast and can pitch multiple innings if you need him to. So that's a really deep bullpen. And obviously I'm missing names. Like, it's a lot of bullpen arms that they got. And I think even if they get better and get more experience after what they had last year, I still think the bullpen advantage that the Yankees would have will put them over the top, even though they got a talented roster.
So, Lamar, moving on from baseball for a second, when I first met you at American University, you were a counselor at a communications camp and pursuing a career in sports journalism. What made you want to switch and become an author, and do you still plan on being involved in sports?
For me, it became a thing more so of happiness. Mm-hmm. So to me, I had to think about, all right, I started writing the book June of last year. So it's been over a year that I've been working on this book, whether I've been editing or writing it. And my capstone program for ASU was in December. So at some point I was like, I really like, you know, writing books. Maybe I can do both. And then I started to think more about it logistically, how many hours that I was spending in my capstone. Mind you, in this professional program, this is not my job, but it felt like a job. I was there from 9 to 5. Most of the time I was there afterwards. I still had to do this online class that was for our media law class. Then I had work because I worked at the gym. So a lot of times I would leave the journalism building and go to work. And then sometimes if I had to still do a package or cut something up that I wanted to cut up, I would come back to the journalism building. So I was getting home like 12, midnight, 1 o'clock, having to immediately eat, go to sleep, and then the whole cycle continues again. So it was just a normal journalism job. Let's say I work like 70 hours in a week. You'll have like 2 days off, which will usually be in the middle of the week, especially if you do sports. What time am I going to have to write a book? And then obviously you have to pay your dues. Even if me going to Cronkite helps me get to a higher market that I didn't think I was going to get to. And at first, it would be in a situation that I would still be making, let's say I make like 40K, 50K. Mm-hmm. But the amount of time and the energy I put in, that's why like journalism is such a, so important. Like people don't realize how much of a grind it is. Like it's a real, real love. So it's like, do I really want to put in that much work? And yes, I love journalism, but the passion doesn't hit me the same as it does with writing. Because I think the differentiator for me is that with journalism, everything is a certain way. They kind of have this, you know, formula. Mm-hmm. With me being, you know, a naturally like fun-loving, creative guy, I don't get to tap into that creative side of myself on the same level in journalism that I can do with writing books. So I was like, yeah, I'm gonna just, you know, take this gamble and focus my attention on writing books, you know, get another job that allows me to free up more free time for myself to write books when I'm not working. Mm-hmm. Instead of journalism, where it's like I'm kind of confined to a box in the way I feel like. And it doesn't get, like, I still love journalism. And like you said about, you know, pursuing sports afterwards, I want to, but I want it to be on my own terms. Like, mm-hmm. A lot of times with a lot of networks, there's a lot of things that you can and can't say. And it's almost like, do you want me to be unbiased? Or do you want me to be biased? And there's all these different, you know, business deals as far as like TV deals and all these other things that some of it I agree with, some of it I don't agree with it. And I would just rather me own my own thing or have my own like branch off of a thing than to work for, you know, a national network or even a local network and kind of be not manipulated, but hey, you have to do this way. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't fit my personality. So writing books fits me because from not just, you know, loving it, it gives me more freedom and I feel more free and more at ease with it.
Yeah, that's so you're able to like fully express yourself with your writing rather than journalism where you kind of are limited.
Yeah.
And so I know that in college you were a party promoter. So how much did that influence you to create the book and the storyline around it?
Oh, that influenced like that influenced majority of the storyline.
Like how much of it, like is like true, like in the what goes on in the book?
Oh, as far as like what's true in the book, like if I had to just think off the top of my head, I would say maybe like I may say like 65-70% of it. I'll say like 70%. Because like obviously you gotta add certain things for it to, far as with it being realistic fiction that is scintillating or interesting to keep the storyline, you know, where it is far as based off of what's real. But a lot of those situations are real. Either I experienced it or someone I know experienced it. So almost all the characters, except for the female characters in the book, like most of the female characters aren't based off of real people that I know, but all the male characters are based off of my friends or people that helped me in some sort of way in my journey of throwing parties. So that's kind of how it happened. And I would not have been able to write this book without that experience, I feel like, in a way too, just because of how impactful, you know, throwing parties and everything is. Like, it's just crazy.
Definitely.
So Omar, oh my goodness.
I mean, I have an M in my name, so I understand.
Yeah, no, it's just, it's Lamar, like Mar and then Mark, because I'm just getting so tripped up right now.
Players are yelling at me a lot.
So, Lamar, are you a big hockey fan or no?
I would say, like, out of 1 out of 10, I'm like a 7. I'm way more into it during the postseason than I am during the regular season. It's because of how it's set up. I don't watch ESPN as much as I did growing up, but still, if you want to watch most, you know, nationally televised games, they're on ESPN or ABC. And then if they're not, it's just like usually football. So with everything being on NBC Sportsnet, unless it's during the playoffs, I don't really be thinking about, oh, let me watch this hockey game. It's just based off of how everything is going in my mind, I just don't really think about it as much. But I'm a big, big Capitals fan. I've been rocking with the Capitals since, like, way, way, way back when. Even before I was this into hockey or knew much about hockey, I was a Capitals fan. Alex Ovechkin is my favorite player. That's my guy. You know, the great, great eight. He's a beast, is the best goal scorer of our generation, in my personal opinion. And I think he has a real chance of beating Wayne Gretzky's record if he's able to keep up, you know, his health and his longevity, because he got one of the best slap shots in the game. And, you know, you can catch him on the power play, catch him on a one-timer. I feel bad for the goalie that got to stop his shot. So,
are you a Capitals fan?
Yeah, been a Capitals fan. Yeah, Alex is my guy, and I was so happy when they won the Stanley Cup, because
2018. You know,
is what?
2018, right?
Yeah, yeah. Because I went to the parade too, so it was my last year at DWC as a TA, and Sarah, like, during that week when we were preparing for the students, she was like, "Oh, you guys can take off the day to go to the parade," and I was like, "This is why you're my favorite boss. This is the energy we need." So I've been waiting all my life just to go to one championship parade. And I was mad I couldn't go to the Nationals last year. Ironically, we had back-to-back parades. But, or back-to-back-to-back, because the Mystics won too. But it was surreal, like, being able to be in that environment, knowing that we won, and knowing that Alex won, because he got so much flack for not beating the Penguins, for Sidney Crosby that. But nothing against Sidney, because he's an amazing player as well. But, you know, Alex has always been there. Like, he's won everything that you could think of. Won Hart Trophy. He's been the leading goal scorer 8 times, which is more than anyone else since. I'm pretty sure they've been keeping track of that. So no one else has done it more than twice, and he's done it 8 times. So he's just a beast, and he's got better on defense. He's a gritty dude, tough as nails. And it's just, you know, it's kind of like the LeBron thing, or actually, no, more like Dirk. Someone that's that great for that long, and all people can say is, oh, he hasn't won yet. But, like, it isn't all his fault. Like, you think of the collapse they had versus the Penguins a couple years ago, or the collapses they had versus the Rangers, or any of these other teams that they faced that they should have beat. And then instead of the team that, you know, that was loaded with Justin Williams and all those great defensive players that they had, that didn't win. What won is, you know, similar to the Nats, very gritty, grinded out team with, you know, Alex, you had Lars Eller, you had, you know, TJ Oshie, a lot of guys that's been there, but also, you know, you had the young blood like Andre Burakovsky, guys like that. So you had Jacob Verana, guys like that, that also that were talented and were there to get them over the hump. So that was great to see. And then Backstrom got hurt and Lars Eller stepped up. So stuff like that. And you need all of that mentally and physically to win. And once they beat the Penguins, I knew it was a wrap.
Yes. Lamar, here, I also have a question about your book. What inspired you to write the book? And can you tell me the storyline along with the book?
All right. So what inspired me? I don't know if you guys follow Gary Vee, but I saw a video of Gary Vee around the same time that I got the idea to write a book. And he was like, people from the age of 22 to 30, they have the perfect time to make whatever mistakes that they want to make, and there'll be minimal risk behind it. So I was like, huh, like what could I do, like far as taking risks or do something different that I haven't been doing? So I thought of writing a book because I remember my barber years ago, like literally my last year at DWC, I remember him mentioning I should write a book. He said, man, you've been out of school, out of state, you're about to do it again. I'm pretty sure you probably did something exciting that be book worthy. Kind of scoffed it off, didn't really pay it no mind. But now, for whatever reason, at this time, that's the first thing that kind of traveled back in my mind. So that inspired me to even think that, hey, I should write a book. And then far as the storyline, the main character, Jack Onovan Carter, which has a whole nother funny story behind it, he is based off of myself. So I am Jack Onovan Carter. And he is a sports writer at this fictional newspaper called the Turnit Tribune at this fictional university called Turnit University, like turn up, but turn it. So that's why I did it like that. And their mascot is the Fighting Turnips. So just to put like a funny spin on it, but he's this sports writer that essentially becomes a party promoter overnight. He interviews this girl for this story, and her name is Bethany. And immediately when he interviews her, he becomes smitten. He like, oh, she the one. Like how AI was talking about in his LeBron, Michael Jordan analysis, is like, she the one. So he's like, oh, I gotta get her. So then it kind of starts off with the whole boy meets girl kind of vibe where he's like, I have to, you know, get her attention. So I'm not gonna give away how it gets to that, but he essentially realizes that, hey, I should start throwing parties. Like, maybe I'll get to see her more, et cetera, et cetera. Starts throwing parties, and it ends up, you know, bringing them a little bit closer. But he realizes through initially the first couple parties that it's not about him. It's about, you know, everyone else. So instead of it being a act to fulfill his own needs with him getting this girl that he wants so bad, it becomes, hey, I'm empowering the other students around me because, you know, it's set up like how my school was at UK and how a lot of big PWIs, you know, the LSUs, the Alabamas, Floridas, Oregons, et cetera, are usually set up like, but especially like that in SEC schools, that you'll have it where it's very Greek life and then everyone else. And it's like, how could you just alienate everyone else like that? You know what I'm saying? So he is the guy that, you know, is the people's champ. And then his antagonist, Brett Williams, is the guy that basically is the wild card. He's the guy that wants everything to stay the same that has always, you know, been far as with his school. So he is rich and affluent, and his dad is the president of the school. And he's like, everything has to be my way. And Jack Onovan is like, no, like, I want things to change at our school. So they get in a big party war between the two of them. And then that leads to all types of wild stuff, far as like relationships, friendships, et cetera. So,
gotcha. So talking about Kentucky, what was so your experience there? And then you went to Arizona State for graduate school. So what, do you still root for Kentucky? Are you an Arizona State fan? And what was that experience like going to the Kentucky games?
All right, so that's a thing. I have several friends at Arizona State. Even my cohort, my master's cohort, would make fun of me for this. But I do not root for Arizona State, like, one bit. Now, I do like the Arizona State women's basketball team because I actually know girls on that squad. So, like, I rock with them heavy. So, I may root for the Arizona State women's basketball team over the Kentucky women's basketball team because I rock with the women's basketball team heavy. Like, they can hoop. And just on a personal level, they some really, really, really dope girls. Like, really dope women. You know, really dope women. And, I mess with them heavy. But far as anything else, oh, it's Kentucky all the way. And they don't like it. They's always like, oh, why you be talking down on ASU? Because it's just a different vibe. It's like Kentucky's college town. Everyone is so engrossed in our sports teams.
Mm-hmm.
It's just surreal. And as far as like going to the games, it's a reason why the fandom is crazy how it is. Like, you go to anything, they show up and they show out. Like, big football games, big basketball games. I remember the two biggest basketball games I went to, ironically, we lost both, but it was still fun to be there. UCLA, when Lonzo Ball came to town. And that was a fun, fun game to watch because him and De'Aaron Fox got the matchup, you know.
Fox Bam. Being born, right?
Yeah, Bam, TJ Leaf, the whole nine. And then Kansas game is when Josh Jackson was there. And Josh Jackson gave us problems, him, Frank Mason, and Devontae Graham. And we lost that one in a close game, too. So those were fun just because of all the NBA guys I got to see. Like,
that's
really all the guys I just named in the league. So it was fun.
It's so cool.
So Lamar, I have, like, one more, like, quick question for you because we also, like, have, like, certain – because we're starting to run out of time. Do you think LaMelo Ball will be the number one pick?
It's hard because of – this is, like, I feel like the number one pick this year is all based off of preference on who wins it in the lottery because there's no, like, clear-cut number one. But I think out of all the prospects that we've seen or that we are, you know, worried about coming up in this draft, I think LaMelo has the biggest upside. Like, LaMelo, he can pass, he can shoot, he's 6'8", like 6'8", point guard. And his IQ and his feel for the game is surreal. Like, some of the passes that he's able to make is not normal. And you can tell that him playing in Australia, even though people will be critical and talk about the numbers or even before then when you talk about the numbers, you also got to think that him playing pro ball helped him a lot. So even if, as a result, it takes him a little bit longer in the NBA, I feel like it'll click sooner for him just because, you know, he's used to playing against grown men, that type of deal. I think more so with him, when his body starts to catch up, that's when it'll click. Like, you know, he needs to get stronger. He needs to get more, you know, used to the physical contact of the NBA because that's a different level of athleticism. But a guy with that level of feel, like that ability to pass, like that type of ability to pass like Lonzo. But then, you know, he has more of a, I would say, a gunner mentality far as like his shooting touch. I feel like his shooting touch won't be as much of a problem as it was with Lonzo because of the way, you know, LaMelo shoots the ball and has always shot the ball.
Gotcha.
And his form as well. So little stuff like that. He resembles Lonzo a lot far as like around the time as a prospect, but I think he's bigger. I think his pro experience before this may give people a more of a reason to want to pick him, more like, you know, kind of like the Luka effect. Even though in difference, Luka killed it.
Gotcha.
I think that LaMelo, I don't know. I don't know if I believe in the hype because, like you said, he was in Australia. Those guys I don't think are as good as the guys playing in college. But I do think that he has a lot of upside because of his height. and he seems to be a little more confident than Lonzo is.
100%, 100%. Should be fun. I don't know who's going to get picked, number one, but I think LaMelo will turn a lot of his, and a lot of people will consider picking him number one just because of the upside, what he potentially could be.
I agree. And before we go, me and Jair, we have our new segment where we talk about the star of the week. So my star of the week was Timothy Lou Cabaret of the Nets because he scored 26 points against the Bucks.
And my star of the week is Devin Booker for what he did against the Los Angeles Clippers. To me, that's humiliating.
Oof, that is a good one. Me, just off the top of my head, I would have to say I was going to say Bam because, like, that's my guy being the UK and they won a big game versus the Celtics recently. But I'm going to just, you know, switch it up. And I'm going to give Jonathan Tays some love because he had a big game, scored two big goals last night versus the Oilers. And they're now 2-1 in the lead for that series in their qualifying round. And he's been doing his thing. Played real good game one, played real good game three. They're captain, their leader, and that's the reason why they got this series lead and got a chance to move on to the first official round of the playoffs outside of, you know, the qualifying round.
Yep. Jair, you got to love that, talking a little hockey. Jair was waiting for someone to talk about hockey. He's been like, can we please talk about hockey? I was like, man, I don't know a lot about hockey, but now he got his chance, Jair.
Yep, I finally did. For the dummy of the week, I have to put mine as the Milwaukee Bucks for losing to the Brooklyn Nets and also losing to the Houston Rockets.
I actually agree with that too. Like, losing to the Nets is just embarrassing right now. Their whole starting lineup isn't playing, and they beat the Bucks. And then
I'm gonna have to say the Grizzlies because the Grizzlies, they have laid a fat egg since they came to the bubble. You have a chance to get a playoff berth that will be great experience for everybody on the ball club. Now, obviously, you can't do anything about the injury with, you know, Jaren Jackson, which we hope he, you know, has a speedy recovery. But they're really at a chance where they might not even make the play-in just because they're 0-4 already in the bubble. And their schedule isn't going to get any easier.
I agree.
So, and also, what about the funniest moment of the week?
For the funniest moment of the week, I would have to give it to the Mets and Yoenis Cespedes, the whole saga that's going on.
We're also running out of time here. I have to put down Yoenis Cespedes as the as the funniest moment of the week with the Mets saga.
Lamar, what are your thoughts on that?
I'm gonna have to say the Oilers losing to the Blackhawks last night because they were up a goal with, I'll say, about 5 minutes left, and they ended up losing that game.
Hey guys, I'm sorry, we had a little bit of a technical problem here, but we're gonna get back into Dummy of the Week. I'm here with Mark Budd, and I'm also here with Lamar Smith, our guest today. So, Mark, who would you say the Dummy of the Week is?
Dummy of the Week is definitely Yoenis Cespedes. Well, no, that's the funniest one. The Dummy of the Week is the Milwaukee Bucks for them losing to the Nets. Like, how are you going to lose to the Nets? Like, they have no one on their roster, and they've been getting killed by everybody, and then they all of a sudden you get TLC destroying the Bucks, and the Bucks are supposedly the title favorites. I don't know. That doesn't look like a title favorite to me.
I think that the Milwaukee Bucks will get it together, but they have to be the dummies of the week for losing to the Brooklyn Nets. And, I mean, I have to give them some flack for losing to the Houston Rockets also.
And the Rockets are good, though, so it's not that embarrassing.
Yeah, but I honestly feel like the Bucks should have a higher standard than losing to the Houston Rockets. But, Lamar, what do you think?
I mean, they give them some slack for the Nets' loss because – they pretty much just sat Giannis and Middleton the whole second half, even though they still should have won. But for me, the dummy of the week has to be the Grizzlies. They came to the bubble to get the AC. They were very adamant about getting the AC and complained about blah, 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 there shouldn't be any playing game. Well, you can't complain when you can't even win a game. So they've been 0-4 this week thus far with their bubble games. And
lost Jaren Jackson.
Lost Jaren Jackson, unfortunately, to, you know, an injury. And hope he has a speedy recovery. But even still, even when everyone was, you know, fully healthy and whatnot, they were struggling. And then now you have Portland on your heels. They're coming. The Suns are one of two teams that's undefeated in a bubble thus far. They're coming. So, I don't know. At this rate, Memphis doesn't even have to worry about getting to a playing game because their schedule only gets tougher.
And that brings us to our final segment, the funniest one of the week. And Jair, I'm going to let you take this one because that's happening to your Mets and Yoenis Cespedes. Even though he was on my fantasy team and I wasted a draft pick on him, that's besides the point.
Told you. I told you.
You lost a player.
Lamar, we're in a draft. You drafted Yoenis Cespedes. And like when I saw Yoenis Cespedes was picked, I was like, who the hell drafted Yoenis Cespedes? And then Mark was like, I did not. And we played each other week one. And I remember opening day, he had a home run. And I was just like, okay. He had one. He had a second one against the Boston Red Sox. I was like, okay. But I mean, I remember I was going to Chipotle. And actually, no, before that, I was talking to my cousin. We saw that we got Billy Hamilton. I was like, why would we get Billy Hamilton when we have Juan Lagares? Then the reports come as I was going to Chipotle that Yoenis Cespedes is missing and everything like that. And I put out this thing on my Instagram story and I just say, take out the T and S and replace it with another, take the T out of Mets, replace it with an S. The New York Mets. And I remember everyone saying, oh, don't start saying that now, like this could be serious. Look, I understand that it could be serious, but me knowing Yoenis Cespedes, and I don't mean to be mean, it's just like I know that he probably did something, like maybe he just quit. I had a feeling like he either quit or he was in the hotel or he was sleeping or maybe hopefully not, maybe he was sick or maybe he was doing something in the Magic City like Lou Williams. That was my feeling about that one.
I just heard Magic City Monday before I got home. Like, earlier this morning, I listened to that.
The song? You're talking about the song?
The song.
Magic City Monday by Louis Williams last
Jeezy.
Week.
So yeah, City. I listened to it last night, a podcast, and I was like, let me listen to this song. I have to hear this. Abracadabra, Orlando. Magic Orlando.
I mean, hey, look. Magic City.
That was the best verse on the song, so I feel you.
The Futures part with the song has Young Jeezy and it has 2 Chainz on it. But yeah. I was thinking like Yoenis Cespedes, he could have pulled the Lou Williams too. But the reports come after the game that you know he just left and everything like that. It didn't surprise me. It doesn't faze me. And the whole entire thing, I think that the truth about that, the background story about it, is that it was a money situation. That's what I believe. I don't mean to question the man with his family, and allegedly he has people in his family that have an underlying condition, and I understand that. But it's just like the Mets lost 5 games going into that time, and apparently he had a money problem with Brody Van Wagenen and his amount of playing time. And don't forget, coming off 2 surgeries on his feet, the Mets did not want him playing left field, so it could mess up his playing time when you already have Dominic Smith and Robinson Cano on the team. So, yeah. I mean, I think that's a funny and a dummy moment of the week on the Mets' part. Lamar, how do you feel about Yoenis Cespedes leaving?
I mean, I thought it was weird considering he opted into the season and then just out of nowhere he's like, nah, I'm good. I don't want to play no more. So the contract situation would make some sense. Like, it would make sense for a good reason for him to leave. But Yoenis Cespedes is just a wild card. From his antics where he brought a new car to train camp like every day of the week that one time.
One day, I was like,
yeah. Then he had the custom Jeep, like the whole nine, or just the stuff that he does on the field, like the energy he brings, or he's just a bigger than life persona.
Oh my goodness.
Yes. Yeah, so
I don't know if I could say that one.
So I don't know. It could be anything with him. Like, he a great definition of a wild card. It can
Wait a minute. Lamar. A bigger than life persona? Deion Sanders was a bigger than life persona. And I think that Deion Sanders actually honestly cares more about the game than Yoenis Cespedes did. I think that Yoenis Cespedes was constantly cigarettes in the first base while like leading into the like from the dugout to the clubhouse and stuff like that during batting practice. And don't forget about 2016 when he was injured and then he had a quad injury, then he was caught with Kevin Millar playing golf.
I didn't hear about that one. I do remember him being – he's been injured pretty much his whole time with the Mets. So, like, outside of the year when they got him and he crushed everything, he's pretty much been hurt. Yeah. So, I didn't know that he was out there playing golf. That's wild.
That was years ago. It was like he had a quad injury and then Kevin Millar from MLB – I wrote an article, too. Kevin Millar – from MLB Network, he was caught playing golf with Yoenis Cespedes after he was, like, put on a DL. It was something like that. And also, don't forget about the wild boar attack last year.
I remember hearing about that.
He had an accident at his ranch in Florida or something like that, yeah. I remember, there was, like, a documentary about him, too, and he was in the trees. And every single Met fan was cringing just looking at him, like, working a tree.
Dude.
That's good assessment, though, man.
That's assessment is for you. I have no words even for that. That's a lot going on.
Lamar, here's another one for you. Who do you think is going to buy the Mets?
I think it's a good chance that Steve Cohen is going to buy the Nets. I mean, he was so close in buying the Nets before that deal like broke through. Because the Wilpon family wants to keep it for, like, the next 5 years or something like that, which I don't even understand what makes sense of that. If you want to sell the team, how do you still want to hold the team for 5 more years? You don't know what could happen in 5 more years. So I thought that was weird. And then, obviously, A-Rod, his group wants to get it. And then the Harris, Blitzer Sports, like, their group, they're trying to get it. So, I don't know. I think with these situations, unless you have a group that knows how to negotiate well and they have better interest in wanting to do business with you, it usually becomes who has the bigger bag. And Steve Cohen has the biggest bag. He's worth, like, close to $15 billion. And he had the highest bid at basically almost giving him $3 billion to want to get the team. So, I think – if he's bidding that high off the jump and the Wilpon family wants to sell it by October, it's a good chance that he'll give them an offer that they can't refuse and they just be like, hey, had a team. We don't want no part of this no more.
I think for the Mets personally, though, it would be better to get A-Rod, because A-Rod would apparently run the team. And A-Rod's like a good analyst and he obviously knows baseball.
Yeah.
A-Rod than Steve Cohen.
I could see something completely firing back on the Mets if A-Rod was in the same division actually as Derek Jeter in terms of owning.
Yeah.
I could see this firing back.
Because Derek blew up that team because he ain't want to pay them, which I don't understand how you get rid of your two best players in Ozuna and Stan.
Yelich.
But hey,
Yelich.
Oh, Yelich too. Yelich. Bang! He got rid of that whole outfield. That's a loaded outfield.
Oh yeah.
He would have been set. All he would have needed was pitching. But, hey, that's to each his own. That's why bad teams stay bad and good teams stay good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, don't forget about when the Mets traded away Ari Dickey and he ended up getting Noah Syndergaard, actually, and Travis Darno years ago. Don't forget about that one, about how things turned out. or what it was meant
to be. I actually worked out for them because R.A. Dickey, after that 1 year, that knuckleball wasn't working for him in the same way that it worked for him. When still, to me, he stole the Cy Young. Gio Gonzalez, I still think Gio should have won the Cy Young that year. But, hey, it is what it is. It is what it is. But I think Gio should have won it that year.
Still don't understand how Rick Rosell won the Cy Young.
Because of run support. Because of run support. His good old friend run support.
Yep.
That's the reason why he won.
Yep.
They saw 20 wins. They was like, hey, let's just give it to him.
Lamar, we want to thank you for coming on our show today. I can't wait till the book comes out. When is it coming out? You said November?
December. It comes out the week of December 7th. So between then and now, I'll just be making up final edits and whatnot. And then just trying to decide the cover, all that type of stuff. You know, logistical things.
Can't wait to read it, though. But, yeah, it was great talking to you. Definitely would like to have you on again, Jair.
Thank you, Lamar. And thank you for coming and visiting us. Shout out to Tay on the Track.
Yeah, for our introduction music. But we'll talk to you guys next week. And I'm your host, Mark Budd.
I'm Jair Brooks Davis.
And I'm Lamar Smith, Lamar L.A. Smith.
Jair, stop the recording.
To listen to more Tripod Productions, go to thetriangle.org/podcasts.